You're listening to Everything Environment by Monga Bay India. Clean energy is one of the world's ammunition to meet the challenges of climate change. The energy sector is the source of around 3/4 of global greenhouse gas emissions. In India, clean energy is also pitched as a promise to bring reliable electricity to millions. India has an ambitious clean energy target that needs technology and innovation. While government and private sectors have their role to play, startups are critical for innovation and faster execution. They identify local, national, and global problems, find opportunities, and develop solutions. India is home to the third largest startup ecosystem, with about 57,000 startups. A fraction of this number is working in sustainability and solving climate change issues. Worldwide, it's noted that the number of government policy measures to help startups get new clean energy technologies to the market has risen sharply since the Paris Agreement was signed in 2015. As of now, electric vehicles or EVs are an investor favorite. Some startups are also finding ways to recycle electronic waste and recover rare critical minerals that can be reused in renewable energy systems. You can listen to the journey of one such startup in episode 7 of Gigawatt. From bringing solar power-based products to provide job opportunities in rural India, to companies innovating to increase the life of batteries, startups are addressing various needs of the different stages in the renewable energy journey. But are there enough ideas, enough startups, and enough support for such startups? And more importantly, is there money to be made? Is there money to invest? In this episode, we'll speak to stakeholders involved in a startup's journey to success. A co-founder, an investor, and an incubator. I am Mayank Agarwal, contributing editor at Monga Bay India. We are an online publication dedicated to bringing you stories on science and the environment in India. In our special podcast series, Gigawatt, we'll explore some of the biggest questions, challenges, and opportunities in India's transition from fossil fuels to clean energy sources. We start this episode by talking to a startup.
How Logman came up. It came up almost like every startup comes up.
Pankaj Sharma is the co-founder at Log9 Materials, a startup focusing on deep tech innovations for energy storage technologies and clean mobility.
There is a very powerful idea or an early idea that we had. In our case, my co-founder Akshay had figured out a way to synthesize graphene literally in his kitchen lab. It's been very, very difficult to get graphene synthesized at a decent quantity without spending too much of money. It's a good conductor of heat. It's a good conductor of electricity. It has a lot of surface area. So we had some material in our hand, but we didn't know what to do with it.
They kept experimenting. A brief effort to improve lead acid batteries led them to mix graphene and enhance the product. From there on, they saw the potential to expand their research and development in the sustainable energy space. Pankaj says that only installing solar and wind farms will not help us transition to renewable energy. Energy storage, one of the significant gaps in India's clean energy transition, is Log9's focus area.
So you never get a constant generation of energy. Sometimes the clouds are up, sometimes the sun is not shining that well because of some atmospheric this thing. So what you get is intermittent. Sometimes it's very high, sometimes it's low. And the grid is not designed to take variable or fluctuating power. It needs a constant input of energy. And hence, we lose a lot of energy that we generate in a solar plant just because it's not been conditioned to go into this thing. On an average, you know, the numbers are out there, something like 16 to 20% of energy gets wasted in this process. So, you know, if you've installed, let's say, 100 gigawatt of renewable solar, you're able to consume 75 to 80% of that back into the grid. The remaining 20, 25% is getting lost. It's not usable. If I can store that 20, 25% energy that's getting generated intermittently or not at the level at which it can be absorbed, store it in a battery pack and then give it back to the grid in a very clean, stabilized way.
The deep technology and materials science startup believes that it is pioneering responsible energy. It has focused on developing efficient alternatives to the high-demand lithium-ion batteries, battery packs that last long and charge faster in tropical climates such as India's.
We created a battery pack that's built on a very advanced lithium-ion technology. Now, these batteries can survive for 20 years, 25 years easily. So here is a great example of technology and innovation coming together where the technology is ready for today, But the innovation that's been built into that particular product is something that will survive for another 2 decades. So there is interplay of companies, but honestly speaking, there is so much of pressure to go cash positive to become profitable as a startup that you're never able to kind of deep dive into R&D and just create solution for immediately tomorrow. So I think the chicken and egg is what is needed is investors who have ability and desire to write bigger checks and wait longer. And startup founders who are built with a mindset of building innovation rather than technology all the time. You build product, that's fine. But your R&D roadmap should survive for another 20, 30 years. It should be constant improvement. For lack of a better example, I can talk about, imagine if Intel could only produce Intel 1 and had no ability of producing Intel 2, Intel 3, Xeon processors, and everything that they've done. That's the gap between innovation and technology.
Our next guest will speak a bit more on the innovation and funding challenges. Smita Rakesh is the Vice President and Partner at Social Alpha. Social Alpha is an India-based platform that supports startups at different stages in their lab-to-market journey. Smita leads their work in the climate and sustainability sector. With years of interacting with and grooming startups, Smita observes several hurdles to India's startup ecosystem, especially for the ones in the clean energy space.
International Energy Agency's Energy Transition Report had said that 35% of emission reduction potential lies with innovation at early stages, and nearly 50% of it is with the ones that haven't reached the market yet. So we can see what role early stage innovation and many of them being taken to commercialization through startups will have a role to play in. But again, innovation and technology can't operate in isolation. So while the tech can bring really irreversible and non-linear change, we will also need innovative business models, right funding at the right time, right partnerships, and a very conducive regulatory atmosphere. This innovation, you know, will also come from startups along with all the R&D labs, will come from, you know, all the other research institutes. We will need to find for all the research going on anywhere in our labs or anywhere in our institutes, what are the entrepreneurial mechanisms to commercialize these technologies? We are seeing this new model of startups marrying some of these researchers or innovators in the lab and co-creating, you know, an enterprise that takes the solution to market. So your innovator and entrepreneur doesn't need to be the same person. You can, you know, this kind of a partnership in the new model is really, really helpful because we need to move beyond patents and peer-reviewed paper and take some of this game-changing technology that's there in the labs to market right now. And, you know, the bottleneck around research not being undertaken with correct understanding of the market needs to be gradually broken, and therefore research needs to be funded by industry where the commercial side of it is talking to the R&D. And like I said, startups will provide the necessary fillip, but you know, all the actors will need to come forward and continue that momentum. Because what startups can ensure is innovation. They can also ensure what is very critical right now, the speed of execution. But all the other support, the kind of unburdening and de-risking the startup is what the rest of us will have to do. So, you know, it's very interesting. If you were to map, you know, a heat map of the kind of funding that goes into clean energy, especially in the innovation space, you'd see sectoral differences and then you'd see stage-wise differences, right? So there is stage-wise inequity as well. I mean, all of that is logical and can be understood because the investment space is going to invest into what is de-risked. So the problem is that a lot of deep tech solutions, which is whether it's the battery tech, I mean, all of this is nascent and even evolving at a global stage. But in India, it's at a very, very early stage. So mostly at a product or prototype development stage. And therefore, it requires very high risk investment, patient investment from public and private sector with long term, you know, horizons in mind, with sort of, you know, ability to take sort of risks around failures. And that is where the funding is missing. In a lot of deep tech space, we see R&D funding at the university level or at the research institute levels. And then we don't see any funding up until, you know, the entrepreneurial route to it, whether it's a startup or a company undertaking it, up until that crystallizes, we don't see a funding. And that's a big valley of threat for deep tech startups.
Smita believes that companies get enough money for pilots and trials, but funding for large-scale deployment of solutions is minor.
Large-scale deployments are often risky, are often not understood. Many times, one stage of product development is not even looking at something like that. You know, many innovations in India and globally are, you know, stay at the patent and peer-reviewed journal stage, right? And they've not factored in the whole commercialization at scale. And innovation, again, can be tech-based innovation or non-tech innovation in the business model, in the financing, right? In the entire approach. We're seeing the as the light at the end of the tunnel or the silver lining as of now is that more and more private sector and government funding is at least acknowledging this as a gap. So right now, the funnel gets very tight here because very few projects, which are either picked up by the bigger private sector players or by the government, meets the criteria, fits into the bill correctly and gets the kind of scale it requires. One example is, we work closely with Tata Power and we've been seeing how they are looking at innovation coming from our pipeline. They've recently set up this microgrids company, rural microgrids company, and they're looking at providing that platform of the microgrids company. So all the microgrids that they are setting up in the villages, they're looking at how is it that some of our innovations can just plug onto this platform if they're proven successful and scale up. So this is a win-win for all. This is a scale-up platform for, say, the startups or the solutions, but it's also a win-win for, say, the microgrids company because they will not have to innovate in every direction on their own, especially given how we are all always running behind time.
Social Alpha set up an incubation lab for clean energy entrepreneurs and startups to promote innovation in the energy space.
So we'd set up an international incubation center called the Clean Energy International Incubation Center in Delhi in 2018. This was set up as a joint initiative of Government of India and Tata Trust. So altogether there, we've incubated and accelerated 40 startups since then, invested in 10 of them, and have created market access opportunities for 8 of them. We also provide go-to-market strategy support, funding support, so seed funding, overall mentorship, seed investments, but also opportunity to syndicate investment from other investors in our network.
With a focus on energy access and efficiency, the Incubation Lab has supported startups in energy storage, e-mobility, clean fuels, and much more. There is a need for sustainable energy sector, and entrepreneurs are finding opportunities. We spoke to Arpit Agarwal, director at an investment firm, Bloom Ventures, who scouts for science-led and hardware startups. He shared insights on how the stage is set or is getting set for certain ideas to become profitable.
See, I come from the world of business where the most important thing is to be pragmatic about what is available to you and you are going to follow the path of least resistance. There is not much scope for being idealistic here. As much as you and I may care about a lot about environment, on our personal basis, as a businessman, I have a duty to follow or what my investors want me to do. And what my investors want me to do is to generate returns for them. Overall, we have about 150 investments, out of which maybe about 110, 120 are active. Out of these, about 10 are, and all of them are active, companies in the climate tech broad area, somewhat broadly defined because it covers e-commerce and covers carbon sequestration and covers the rooftop and EVs. So, I think 10-odd companies in climate tech portfolio.
Bloom has invested in companies developing carbon capture technology, energy analytics, and re-commerce companies that buy and sell used items like cars and phones. Electric vehicles are a crucial part of Arpit's work too.
So, we have been believers in the space broadly. However, we are also being capitalist at heart and trying to temper our expectations. The electric vehicle opportunity, however, is the perfect situation to be in for a fund like ours, where we took very tentative bets with Yulu and Euler. And over the last 1 year, then invested into 3 more companies in that area. Maybe we'll do a couple of more investments in the broader area. We also invested in a company in solar rooftop, which is bringing the solar rooftop companies, company called Aram, which is making solar rooftop more accessible to commercial and industrial establishments. There are parts of the entire spectrum which have started to make sense, which has started to be or look like they are at the cusp of very fast growth. And that is when we want to take a bet.
All our guests in the show agree that electric mobility has the lion's share of investments. Regular industry discussions and updates on government policies keep the sector buzzing. For the sustainability business, Arpit says that the gear has shifted with action by the government, regulatory bodies, and private sector.
Globally, there is a trend, and last year, our Prime Minister committed that we will be carbon neutral in 2070. So everything will have to be driven from that backwards. And some companies have gone ahead and even announced that they will be carbon neutral by, let's say, 2030. So they are far ahead of the curve. So they will have to make those investments and changes in their business models to achieve those goals. Most likely, and the experience suggests of the companies which have actually announced themselves to be carbon negative, even oil companies have announced, the experience suggests that a large part of this carbon neutrality is going to arrive at by doing carbon trading and not really by changing operations significantly. And therefore, there is a very large opportunity in carbon credit manufacturing, carbon credit trading, and carbon credit burning, so to say. This is a very large opportunity. Apart from this, what is also happening very clearly is that there is a very clear trend of regulators asking the larger companies to list their climate footprint or carbon footprint explicitly on a quarterly or a yearly basis, depending on which country you're part of. That is going to ensure that companies are at least sensitive to it. And those investors who really care about it can take that into consideration, even though it may or may not have an impact on the valuation of those companies. When these things happen, there it creates a very large market for services and marketplaces. That is going to happen. There's also very increasingly large demand of venture capitalists who are looking to invest. So a lot of money is being raised in VC funds to be invested into climate tech area. And I think this is only going to grow, at least in the next 5 years, maybe even 10 years. If someone has to do a startup, they should do climate tech startup. The time has arrived.
Pankaj from Log9 is optimistic for his company and others too.
There are certain technologies which have matured out by now. 10 years back, fuel cells were not at the stage at which they are. 10 years back, lithium ion cells, energy density was not there where we wanted. But I think now the technology is stabilized to the point that whether you have a lithium ion cell or a fuel cell, or even the pricing of, let's say, solar panels, everything has come to a point where it's financially viable to have profitable clean energy companies spring up, a small startup, and then take a bigger shift. So I think, yeah, the environment is right. And we are definitely benefiting from that excitement because it's about finding the human capital that's going to build that dream for you along with you. So finding those individuals who are coming from that engineering background, who are fired up to do something about the environment and have the necessary training and skill set to have that human capital available is something that we are benefiting from in India at this point in time.
Apart from the involvement of state and national governments and the country's private sector, Arpit sees enormous potential in foreign collaborations. He says that technology can be created anywhere in the world and imported and adapted into India.
Of course, when you can do tech transfer, those companies can also open shop in India and therefore become large businesses, which is bound to happen. So this is one thing that foreign collaboration can do. Foreign organization can also look at Indian ecosystem as a place to invest in, not only via their businesses, but also via their capital, where they can take up stake into these companies, which I would recommend them to strongly look at, because I think the big climate frontier outside of China is India, and a lot more will happen in this sector. Apart from this, I would definitely believe that foreign companies should look at some of the early companies in India which are about to launch technology or have proven some kind of proof of concept. They are ready to be out-licensed into their home countries. For example, an Indian company can solve a problem in Israel or in Italy or in Chile, who knows. What government can also do is to encourage more and more people to make sustainable and healthier choices. Therefore, there is a consumer pull, which eventually all companies will respond to on more sustainable, and sustainable should become from being fashionable to being mainstream.
It's clear that there is a lot to do to support the clean energy startup space, but the funding.
Is it enough right now? And that is what is tricky right now. Like I said, overall, not enough, not in the quantity, not in its distribution. So what we need is more finance, but also more blended finance, because everything, whether it's grant, debt, equity, project finance, you know, viability gap funding, FLDGs, everything has its own unique purpose. What ends up happening is that when a startup only gets one kind of money, they end up taking the wrong kind of capital at the wrong time. And that sort of is more damaging to their journey. You know, debt at a wrong time, or equity dilution at a wrong time, or say grant at a time when you should be profitable and looking at, you know, an equity-based, commercial capital-based scale-up operations. All of that can be really, really detrimental to the startup's journey. So yes, more capital, more diverse and blended capital, but more importantly, more patience and, you know, more patient capital.
Please share this episode with your friends and family or on social media. This show was produced and scripted by my colleague Karthik Chandramouli. edited and mixed by Tejas Dayanand Sagar, copy edits by Priyanka Shankar, and the Gigawatt artwork is by Pooja Gupta. We will be out with another episode of Gigawatt soon. Take care.